we are in the heart of Texas. We're at the Stagecoach Inn in Salado talking with Mark Brooks, PGA Pro, and you founded a new organization, a new group, 803
Golf, and we're going to do several things from it, but our primary offering coming out of the box here, we're going to do outings for groups of generally 8 to 12. I mean, we might take a group as small as 6, but...
So it's a surgical golf travel organization.
It is where you will, you know, come to us at this point. And right now, we're doing them out of the University of Texas Golf Club, which is a fantastic facility. In golf lingo, it's quite young. It's only about 20 years old. All the management, luckily, I've known them for years and years, and the general manager and the head golf professional, they've all been there since the inception. So they know how to run an operation, and they have two wonderful owners, and they've been gracious enough to allow us to utilize their on-site housing. They have three four-bedroom casitas, big, large, you know, full-size kitchens and living areas and dining rooms and balconies and porches, and also four separate bedrooms that all have their own utilities that are for your own restroom. So there's a lot of privacy that's involved with each person, which I thought was important. And everything's in walking distance. You walk to the club, you're going to walk to the driving range.
Connection with UT Austin?
This is not connected to UT Austin,
but yet,
as far as the university.
But the kids play there, right?
This owner group, again, they're big time UT people, and they allowed very early on in fact it was part of the original plan to allow the university golf teams, the men's and women's teams, to have a home facility. So they've built a really nice learning center for the kids there. Pretty large driving range, and the kids do studying, practicing. They don't really work out there. They utilize the downtown, of course, facility. And then at the other end of the range, inside the last year or so, there's a new two-bay learning center where you can actually do a lot of filming, a lot of high tech involved now with teaching golf.
So I heard that your 803 Golf that you do, that's part of your package, right?
We do everything. It's you come to us and we're going to take care of you for a couple of days and a couple of nights, two rounds of golf. There's instruction involved. The beauty of the 803 Golf is that we can tailor this and will tailor this to the client's wants and needs. Obviously, if you're not a golfer, we're probably not going to be where you choose.
Right.
We have racket and tennis. We have, you know, racket sports that are, they're only like a 2-minute walk from the casitas. So, you know, racket sports, all the facilities there, because the group is so small, you know, relatively speaking, when you're only talking about a dozen people, that's how we're able to utilize this facility. So to compare us to a resort, you go, well, couldn't I kind of get this at a resort somewhere else? I'm going to say, well, you could get part of the experience at a resort, but you're not going to get the hands-on, you know, with golf professionals. And
so it's the one-on-one is the real game shifter.
Well, for example, I'll play with each group. So if you took had 12 people come, that's three foursomes. We have other professionals that are readily available to also assist. For example, I could deliver a couple more major champions, and every group could have a major champion available for, you know, quite reasonable pricing nowadays. And so, yes, it includes everything from instruction, and not to leave it out, but one of the big things I think is going to be the, you know, evening chats and fireside chats, which is the, you know, popular term to use this, but from, you know, business professionals to sports, you know, former Major League Baseball players, sports psychologists, you know, we have one that's already offered his services to the program that, you know, people that are maybe familiar a little bit with golf and not even golf probably heard of the movie that 7 Days in Utopia. So the author of that book, which that movie was based on, is a fantastic speaker, motivator, and that'll all be part of this experience.
So the differentiation of your group, your organization, your golf travel group, really has a lot to do with intimacy and one-on-one philosophy.
100%. You know, team building, rewards, you know, companies want to reward clients. Incentive. 100%.
So corporate.
You may want to reserve a couple hours to self-motivate your employees or your, you know, the people that you're entertaining. And that is totally.
So that's interesting. So golf is a motivational tool.
It's been known that you know, a lot of people's personalities and characteristics come out when you put them on a golf course for 4 or 5 hours. And I guess if you hand them a scorecard and a pencil, then you'll find out even more. So, and not to say that these are not necessarily competitions. In fact, based on the skill levels that, mm-hmm. that people have, we'll tailor it to that. So even the format that you play when you play golf, we can make it super fun for people that are even just beginning. Mm-hmm. People that are a little bit familiar with golf, I'm going to allow you to custom tune or custom refine your golfing experience, which will include, of course, being on the golf course. That's where you want to get out and do it. But you could make it as instruction centric as you want. You mm-hmm. could even make it more competitive centric, which some groups will. If they all are, you know, avid golfers, they're going to want to have a little competition amongst each other.
So it's totally customizable.
100%. We're providing the facility, mm-hmm. the manpower, the service, the great food. You're going to come have a wonderful 2.5 days. I mean, I hope people really take advantage of the 2.5 days. I travel, as you probably know, I've traveled most of my life. And the 803, actually, the name.
Yeah, where did that come
from? Well, the name, we were just tossing around different names. Mm-hmm. Somebody threw it out. I don't even know who to credit it to, thinking about the name. But I played in 803 official PGA Tour events.
Wow.
In my career, which, as of today, mm-hmm. It's being threatened only maybe slightly by one or two players that are actually approaching. They're not too far behind me in age. So, uh-huh. But I played more tour events than anyone dead or alive. Yeah. To put it in context, for you know, I'm out on the tour quite a bit. I do some television work and instruction with different guys, and you know, the young kids it doesn't even resonate. And then maybe 15 or 20 minutes later, they'll come over and someone will say, "You played in 803." So let me break it down for you. If you played 25 events a year. Mm-hmm. Every year, it would only take you 32 years to get close.
Right.
you'd still have to go play five more. So when they think of it in those terms, how long it could take you to reach 800, they're like, "You're insane." And I said, "Well, I'm rightfully insane. I spent way too many nights in hotel rooms and, you know, airport lobbies and lounges and lines." And that's where it came from.
I want to dovetail back to you in golf. And you have a trajectory of 32-plus years playing golf professionally.
Right.
What have you learned? How has your game evolved?
Wow. My game. I don't even talk about my game anymore. I can still, I have a competent game.
Have you gotten better and better?
No. I got better. I'm going to say I probably peaked emotionally, physically, technically, probably in my from say 30 to 38, right in there, 30 to 40 was probably my prime mm-hmm. stretch.
Does that imply that age is a factor in golf?
Age it does become a factor, no question mm-hmm. about it. Equipment's, let's just say, more diverse now. Mm-hmm. There's more options. So guys are able, they don't have just, let's just say in my early days, there were only a handful of options. Now there are, infinite's almost the correct term. Lighter shafts for driving, for example, for your driver. You can actually, I'm going to say, maintain some speed a lot easier today than you could, you know, say 25 years ago. So we're seeing guys, you know, guys last a lot longer. They're better shape. I'm going to give them that. You know, there is more emphasis on
physical
fitness and, you know, just staying in shape. But that's across society. I think, you know, there's less people that smoke, the excessive drink. And it bled into the tour. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, the old days, you know, guys, they kid about it. But they go, "Those old pros, they used to just finish the round and head into the bar." There was some truth to that. But
that was part of the culture back in the day.
It was part of the culture. The guys didn't have a term I'll call entourages. You know, nobody really had an entourage traveling with them. I mean, we taught each other. We learned from each other. I'm talking about fellow tour players. If you were having trouble with your bunker game, you went and found, if you could get him to get down there, who was one of the better bunker players in tours, they could, "You got an hour to help me, man. I can't get out of the bunker."
One-on-one.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. So yeah. I spent 32 years figuring out how to get out of bunkers. I'm going to share that with people. Mm-hmm. There's certainly more than one way to swing a golf club. There's more than one way to, you know, attempt to make putts. But some of the fundamentals we stick to, I demand that they're taught. But there are different ways, and people have limitations. They have physical limitations. We also have a doctor of chiropractic who's been, you know, involved with the University of Texas as well as the PGA Tour, the Champions Tour, the Corn Ferry Tour. He's on our staff as well. So you're going to get a physical assessment, whether you want it or not. Yeah. I mean, you could probably pass, but generally speaking, that's going to be part of our program, and I insisted that be part of it when we started. So,
and how about, you talked about the length of the shaft, the lightness of the shaft. How critical is that of fine-tuning your people?
It's been proven that reasonably well-fit clubs for you will help, and that is also an optional element. I mean, I'm going to –
That's something your eyes and ears, you're observing. And
It absolutely. You can see it, and, you know, with the – I'm working with a couple of well-known manufacturers right now to see how involved they want to become with the club fitting part.
Right.
It is not going to be required. That's part of this building your own custom experience at 803 Golf. If you want club fitting to be involved, absolutely.
Yeah. Let's talk about the big picture of golf club manufacturers. You know, the Big Bertha comes out. Oh, my God, this is it. You know, now what do you do?
There's a good story there.
Yeah,
I was the first player on tour, first player to win a PGA Tour event with a Big Bertha driver.
Uh-huh.
So that was in, 1991, maybe, 1991. Yes, I was the first player. I wasn't the first player to actually use one in competition, but I was the first one to win with a Callaway Big Bertha driver. So that was kind of an interesting time.
But every year since then, Callaway comes out with the new annual, oh, my God.
They do.
You know, and how much refinement is left to do with golf clubs?
I'll answer that carefully. Given the limitations that the United States, USGA and RNA, that's the governing bodies, you know, the Royal and Ancient over in Europe and the USGA here in the United States, they have put certain parameters and limitations on how the build or the performance that they would like to see come out. It's a hot topic right now. They're actually, as we speak, that's being discussed on, are they going to limit these, let's say, design characteristics? Is it going to be just for touring pros or higher level golf and not really apply to amateurs? I personally think that's where they'll end up, because to think that you've gotten used to your, I'll use the term 460 cubic centimeters is the maximum size of a driver head right now. I do not see them asking amateurs to go back to something, let's say, half that size.
Right.
I think it'd be a huge mistake. I think everyone knows that. So I think they're going to target, everything's about skills. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to separate the best players of the world or the elite players from a skill set standpoint and not have the equipment be too much of an equator to the talents.
But does make a difference.
No question.
Yeah. Let's talk putters for a moment. I thought, how much can you refine a putter? And I went to the Golf Ranch the other day, and I went, oh, my God, they look like little spaceships.
Yeah, it's wild, isn't it?
What is going on with putter world?
It's a bunch of nuts sitting around in rooms. And when you added the computer-aided design and the ability to make, say, wax models very quickly, 3D, I mean, literally put your hands on them, models, it sped up a lot of these, let's just say, different configurations of a putter head that are out there. There are some parameters as far as rules and how they can be done.
Has your putting game changed over the years because
A little bit. I think, when I teach, the three things, you read it first, you aim it, and then you got to roll at the right speed. So you read it, aim it, roll it. Well, I got to roll it in the right direction. So a lot of the emphasis, I'm going to say today versus maybe even, just go back a handful of years where they're all talking about this, the MOI, which is the moment of inertia. That's how much the head twists when you hit it really off center, and trying to say, well, we can fix that. they can fix it only to a point. And
it's operator error, isn't it?
Correct. It's still going to twist some. And now you're talking about something as big as, you know, the kitchen sink down there trying to putt with it, which is kind of ridiculous. And there have been some things that are probably borderline ridiculous. The emphasis now, which I agree with wholeheartedly, is aiming, mm-hmm. helping people actually aim, how they see.
That hand-eye coordination.
Well, it's just how you see. Uh-huh. I mean, there have been extensive tests, and they're not crazy, where you and I would take a certain putter, let's say with a line, you know, that's supposedly aimed, you know, at the hole. That line's going to help you and I aim it at, you know, the correct direction. Well, they've tested, thousands and thousands of people. You and I will see that differently. And so they're learning that we don't all see the same.
Wow.
And
so there's a real subjective, personal element. Though.
Correct. Wow. That is correct. Some of us don't need a line at all.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's a very exciting part of golf.
Would this be something back to when you're on site with your people that have signed up? We talked about the high tech dimension of
putting.
Talk to us about that, what you can do with and for somebody when they come there.
We can definitely do the fitting. That's part of the putting. If someone's there, I'm not going to say you have a bad putter, but if you go through a very simple, not extensive, but it only takes, you know, let's say 10 or 15 minutes, you go through a fitting session with putting, mm-hmm. and you can find out pretty quick, I might have the wrong kind of putter here, actually. Just the shape and the lines that are on it actually may not be helping me.
Interesting.
For example, people now, they like to put a line on the ball, mm-hmm. and then you see it on tour incessantly trying to get that line correct. Well, most people, when they get over the putt, mm-hmm. that line looks crooked.
Oh, interesting.
And so it's really going to be tough now to trust that line. So I would say this. Not the majority, but it could be. A lot of players miss a line, miss aim, and they make up for it in stroke. So, you know, they aim to the left and they stroke it, you know, let's just say stroke it back online.
Uh-huh.
Well, if you're willing to spend hours and hours and hours tricking yourself into thinking that straight, go for it. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have that much time. They'd be better off if they actually had something in their hands that they knew they aimed correctly. That's where good fitting comes in.
Interesting. Talk a little bit more about the high-tech video training that you do there.
Well, we use cameras. I say high-tech, we use the technology to show you where you can improve, to identify where maybe, you know, you could do this a little bit differently. As far as measuring...
So the video is so that they can see themselves.
100%.
Right?
When you can see what you do versus mm-hmm. what you feel like you're doing or you think you're doing, which normally are different things. So it's trying to turn feel into real. And when you can turn feel into real, then you get a much quicker, mm-hmm. a positive result, hopefully.
Very cool. Let's reel back in Mark Brooks' life. Whew. How did this all start? How young were you when you started to play golf, and why did you go pro?
Well, I started, my grandfather basically started me when I was, introduced me early, 7, 8 years old. And
where were you?
On sand greens
in Fort Worth,
in Sorrel, Oklahoma.
Wow!
I would go up there on. My grandparents would take me for like a month in the summer,
mm-hmm.
and he played golf. He became, you know, he loved golf. He only played on a grass golf course about once a month if he was lucky. They drove like an hour to a grass course, and of course he was one of the executives finally at a refinery in the small town in Oklahoma. And they had gone out to a piece of, you know, probably somebody loaned it to them, you know, just this vacant little farmland. And they had built these little circle greens. I'm going to say they were probably 10 or 12 yards in diameter.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And they put a petroleum-based product they mixed with the sand so it wouldn't blow away. And they basically just had, it was almost like brown sugar, heavy brown sugar. They had these brown sugar sand greens, mm-hmm. and they rolled a smooth part in it with a roller. And once you got it on that green, then you moved your ball over equidistant, which was easy in a perfect circle, over to the smoothed area, and you put it into the hole. And that's what they did. And so, I mean, I'm sure they were just – the fairways were just mowed with whatever they had to drag around, you know, real mower they drug behind a tractor. But it was 6 holes, and which is interesting that that would have been probably 1969, 68, 69, 70. it's interesting that we're actually going back to now where if someone builds a six-hole golf course that's got some versatility to it, it's very popular now.
Oh, really?
Oh, no. But wow. Trying to get a shorter experience, yeah. You know, to play real golf, but it doesn't take 6 hours yeah. or 5.5 hours of your day.
Interesting.
But that's where I learned. So that was my model. And, of course, by the time I was about 10 or 11, 10, let's say, I got a little more serious about it. My father was a Baptist minister, so he was fortunate to have a – affordable membership offered to him at the local country club, the club down there. And so that's where I started to play. And of course I played most of my golf either there or at the public golf courses all around Fort Worth. And
did you have a high school team?
We did. We had a junior high team. We were lucky. When I was going to school, ninth grade was actually in junior high there where I went. And we had enough good players that one of my best friend's father, the high school golf coach, and he got it approved for us to play in a handful of events as ninth graders, you know, representing a junior high in a high school tournaments. We actually won one of them.
Wow.
So we weren't very popular invitees after that.
Yeah.
But we went on to have a good high school team. And, yeah, you're right. It was the core group of probably 5 to 7 of us that played, you know, every day down at the club. And I will say this. The biggest influence, I grew up at Diamond Oaks Country Club in Fort Worth, on the north side of Fort Worth, Texas. Lee Trevino actually with a partner of his actually owned that club now.
Wow.
But where I was actually blessed and fortunate was there were a lot of really good players that came through that used Diamond Oaks as basically their home course.
So you were blessed with some awesome mentorship.
I was exposed to some of these guys I wouldn't count them as mentors. Maybe examples of what not to be, but they know who they are. But let's just say I was around a lot of highly competitive, occasional wagering golf at a very young age, and I know for a fact it had a great influence, not just my competitiveness, but seeing these guys hit shots that counted, that really, you know, mattered. There were near life and death experiences that I witnessed and, you know, finally got to participate. You know, they invite you to play in the game. And anyway, that was a big influence on my life.
So game shifter after high school, what did you do?
Luckily progressed enough, was able to come down here to the University of Texas, which is only about an hour from where you and I sit, and was offered a scholarship there and went
so
on.
Full ride?
I did then. Those then. They weren't under the – now it's like 4.5 scholarships they have to split up. It's right. Tough. But you know, great golf coach, George Hannon, and who had coached Ben Crenshaw and Tom Kite previous, and as well as many, many other, you know, great players. But the team was probably, you know, they were having maybe a little bit of a downturn. They weren't doing as well as they should have, but so it was like, I'm going to go there. And not that wasn't my goal, but one of my goals was to help, of course, make the team better, which we were able to do. We won a couple of Southwest Conference championships. In my senior year, we finished second in NCAAs. We had a good shot coming down the stretch.
That's really cool.
But
have been pumped.
We were. You know, at the time, you're all wrapped up in your own little worlds.
Sure.
But we became very more than competitive. Mm-hmm. But I didn't choose to play. I'm trying to fast forward it, you know, to when you're going to turn pro.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably didn't entertain that till. But really, honestly, we all have dreams.
Sure.
But you know, I didn't win a tournament until my senior year in college, a college event. I had some good summers. But, you know, my freshman year, I mean, there were, you know, household names from the golf world, the Hal Suttons, Bobby Clampett, John Cook, and just go on and on and on. There were tons of great players that were 2 and 3 years older than me. I wasn't going to beat them. I mean, right. It would have been lucky if I beat them. And I wasn't that good then. But so by my junior year, you know, now you've put your time in. And fortunately, those guys have graduated. A lot of those players have moved on. Fred Couples, you know. I mean, good Lord, you're not going to beat Fred Couples.
Wow.
Especially then. So they had moved on to the tour. Mm-hmm. And here we were left to, you know, and finally had some success individually and as a team. But about my junior year summer, it was like, let's maybe start thinking about it. I had to have, you know, finances to start. So, yeah, made some good relationships with some oilies out in Abilene, Texas, who built a fantastic facility there. In fact, hosted a tour event for 6 or 7 years in Abilene, Texas.
Wow.
And they were my sponsors when I first turned pro.
Mm-hmm.
We had some local guys that helped me get through amateur golf. And then when I turned pro, those guys were, you know, kind enough, believed in me enough to get me started. And it probably took me 2 or 3 years to wean myself off of that. I didn't lose them a bunch of money, I'll promise you that. But so there, you go back, there were a lot of fortunate things that happened. And some of them you sought out, some you earned, and some were gifts. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the deal, giving back. And but in a different way, not just giving back money. It's that's one of the reasons I teach kids. I prefer to teach kids that love golf. Mm-hmm. And that show a propensity to become good players or better players. Whether they play the tour or not, I could care less. But if we can get them to a level where they can go play some kind of college golf, that's kind of sort of my goal. And that's my part of the give back, because it does take hours. I mean, these kids are pretty needy at times, and you got to do it for them. But
so patience is an operative, isn't it?
I'm tested with that once a week, at least, maybe multiple times with these kids. They want it now, and yeah. It's hard to explain that golf is, it takes time. This is not like jumping on a bicycle and, figuring out how to keep it upright. Golf's very complicated.
You met my mom, 98.
I did, that's right. It can last forever.
Yeah.
But having a good base, but anyway, my junior year, thought I could. I had a real good senior year, and I didn't really have any other choice but to go pro. And so I gave it a shot, and luckily I got on tour. I finished in, let's call it May, May of 83, and by December of 1983, I had a PGA Tour card, and I still hold it today, and I'm 61 years old. So,
wow, cool.
That's a long story cut quick.
I love it.
803 starts later, here we are.
Yeah, and thus 803 Golf.
Yes, sir.
And to learn more about 803 Golf,
803golf.com.
That's too easy.
That's what we're going for.
And if somebody wanted to meet you in person, they'd hunt you down in Austin?
I'm either in Austin or a couple days a week in Fort Worth with a small stable of young and up-and-coming high school, junior high school and college kids.
And one more time about the golf course in Austin.
We're at the University of Texas Golf Club, which is on the north side. It's located in Steiner Ranch. Mm-hmm. We're near the dam, where the dam starts to create Town Lake that goes all the way down into Austin.
That's easy to find.
And in the summer, trust me, we're going to have boat cruises part of our deal.
Wow.
So we know how to deal with the weather. We've grown up here. We know how to show you a good time. And I hope you walk away and you're ready to book by the day you walk off the property.
Mark, thank you so much for meeting with me and sharing. This has been great.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting with PGA Pro Mark Brooks, the founder of 803 Golf. We'll see you on the greens.
From this valley, they tell me you're going. I will miss your bright eyes and sweet smile.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Just remember.